Right, welcome everyone to Fazlift Podcast Episode 7. Really excited today. I've got a guest on. It's Tom Jankowski from TJ Strength and Rugby Muscle. So welcome, Tom.
How's it going?
Good, good. Thank you. Thanks for coming on. And I appreciate you coming on, making time to do this. There's a large time difference from where we both are. So thanks for taking the time out in the day. I'm just going to introduce you to the audience so they all know who you are. Now, cool. From what I've sort of pieced together is you were involved with Rugby Muscle, rugby-muscle.com for a good long while. You also still do the Rugby Muscle podcast, and that's it's available on YouTube, going well. Also, you're a part of rugbydump.com, and you provide coaching for athletes, for rugby players. I think you've done both for well over 10 years now, and sort of recently you've branched out into TJ Strength, which is sort of where I heard of you. And that's sort of more like the online coaching Gen Pop type of thing that we both do. You've got a British weightlifting, you've done a British weightlifting course, you've got a CrossFit qualification, you've competed in Olympic lifting, and so you're a coach of rugby, Olympic lifting, and Gen Pop. And I really like some of the material you put out on TJ Strength. You had a an article which is three things more important than a training program. I really like that one because it's kind of very similar to the way I group things. You set specific goals, specific time frames that you can commit to within your schedule, and then execute those. And that's kind of very much how I operate. So that article really stood out. So that was awesome. Have I missed anything off?
No, I think if anything you've talked too much. I feel like I'm just going to let everyone down now.
No, not at all. Right. So we'll get into the questions. I sent through a few sort of requests on Instagram for various questions. I got a couple of replies back, and these are some that I've picked out as well. So what I wanted to focus on today was your coaching as a sports coach with rugby and an athlete. So to begin with, just talking about team sports, how do you manage sports-specific training for teams? So what I mean by that is, like, how does the training vary over the year, and how do you kind of tie that together with the season?
Sure. So for the most part, I have a few teams that I consult with in terms of, like, that actually all go to the gym together. But for the most part, what I deal with is the individual athletes as part of the teams. And a lot of the time, because they're dealing with me, they're either semi-professional or they have no sort of other, you know, team strength and conditioning program that they have to stick to. So they basically come to me, and I am still essentially their online coach, you know, same way as I would treat anyone else. And really how it varies over the year is it's a case of really, like, identifying most, you know, the most obvious priorities that we need to work on. And that varies hugely from athlete to athlete and person to person, because I have a lot of guys that come in for my, and actually I made a post about this on Instagram today, in fact, where I have a lot of guys that come in and, you know, they're already squatting, you know, 140 kilos plus, they're already, like, really good in the gym, and they're like, right, I need to be the best rugby player I need to be stronger. What do I need to do? And I'm like, no, you don't need to be stronger at all. We're going to work on your aerobic ability, because you're just, by the end of each game, you completely tire yourself out or whatever it is. And we work on those sorts of things. And it really, like, I wish there was like an easy template that I would say I'd use, but for the most part, it's really about identity, just as you would do any bodybuilder. You know, if someone's got lagging arms, you do a lot more training directly towards that. And it's the same thing with your sports, except it, rather than looking at different body parts, now we're looking at, right, muscle size, muscle strength, power, speed, aerobic and anaerobic sort of fitness as well.
Awesome. So I guess I kind of liken that too. If I take on a client, I'll look at their entire program and see what's lacking. So it may not be the gym training that they're doing. It may be something like sleep or nutrition, something along those lines. So you'll kind of look for gaps and trying to fill those in.
Absolutely. Yeah. You really want to look at where someone is weakest, because that's going to give you the biggest bang for your buck. And for the most part, like, especially for guys that are already in the gym, you know, if they've heard of me, they're probably already in the gym and they're trying to figure out exactly what they need to do to sort of make them a better player.
Yeah.
But they've already done the bench press. They've already done the squats. They've done the basic stuff. They've done the bodybuilding style of training or the strength style of training, but they haven't looked at, what do I actually need to do to be the best on the pitch that I can be?
Yeah. I really think that sets apart a good coach from a great coach is that ability. And I'm seeing a lot more of that on Instagram now when I talk to people, because it seems to be the case of, well, we're going beyond just the basic sets and reps. We're actually looking at lifestyle. On to that, as part of a sort of segue on the same question, how much control do you have over their nutrition?
So with teams I consult with, it's all about big rocks, you know? So I try and get people to just have an idea of, bigger picture of what their diet should look like. And that literally is, calories and protein. So as long as they're eating enough calories, that they're feeling recovered, that their weight stays stable, that their gym numbers are going up, that they're fit, you know, that they're feeling good each week, then they're on a good path. If they're feeling under recovered and they're losing weight and they don't want to be, then you want to add in some more calories. If they're the opposite, if they're gaining weight and they're trying to lose weight, or if they're trying to get fitter and their body fat state, you know, is either increasing or staying the same thing. We would just try and reduce the calories or just reduce the overall intake. And it's not, you know, the more dedicated the person is, the more I'll try to push them towards, you know, things like MyFitnessPal, tracking every day. Then we're looking at different macro ranges and whatnot. You know, intra-workout nutrition or peri-workout nutrition, that becomes important. But it really does depend on their dedication levels, because if they really don't care enough to track, then me making them trying to track is only going to just burn them out, and then they're going to end up eating a whole family pack of Doritos instead and just give up.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I think it's sort of like if I take on a new client who's brand new to the gym, and I have done that a few times, you're starting off with a lot of the big basics. And then as they progress in enthusiasm and they progress in their physique, you can sort of add things in.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Awesome.
There's no point looking for, and none of this is the stuff that sells, unfortunately, you know. The stuff that sells is super fruits or super foods and all of this bollocks. But at the end of the day, can I say bollocks?
Yeah, please do. Bollocks, rant, everything you want, yeah.
Absolutely, brilliant. But yeah, all of that stuff, all of that does is pull your attention away from what you should be focusing on, and that's your overall daily or even weekly intake and essentially hitting enough protein.
Yeah, I totally agree. Just on going back to the sports-specific training, how does the training vary over the year? So if we sort of look at, I imagine there's an on-season and off-season. How is that going to vary across the year? Because that's something I'm really interested in. How, say you've got an athlete, a rugby athlete, or a team in this case, who are really heavy into the in-season. They're almost reaching to the end of the schedule of games. They're tired, they're fatigued. How are you going to vary that?
Yeah, so great question. It's a thing that people really, if they're not on a program, they don't even think about it. If you're in season, your sole focus, and again, this depends on dedication levels, because I also deal with some amateurs that, you know, they still want to get better at rugby, but actually they want to get jacked, and that's more important. And again, that's a really important part of recognizing what you're trying to train for and your priorities. But if we're looking at actually trying to improve, then each week, the most important part of an in-season program is that you are firing 100% come game day, because that's your competition. That's where you want to perform your best, and that's where you have the most chance of not only improving, but that's what matters. That's what you're there for. There's no point in us doing a perfect gym program that has you absolutely knackered by the time you get to a game and you play crap, because then that's not why you're in the gym. So that's number one. And that what that means is we can't do a lot of stuff that can really push your fatigue level like low down, mm-hmm. Or high up even. And you can't do, you can't do new stuff as well, because again, that's going to actually really sort of increase fatigue, and it's just going to, you know, stress you out, that sort of thing. My main focus for in season is having you fresh for that Saturday. In off season, that's where we can have some fun. That's where you can walk around with really tight hips like John Wayne. You can do all sorts of high rep stuff. You can do any sorts of different. It's specific for each person, in that some people might need to work speed off season. Some people might need to try and gain some muscle size in season. But we don't have that. We don't have that challenge of having 15 guys that are 100 kilos plus running into you every Saturday that you've also need to recover from. Yeah. So it's in season, it's all about that game day and making sure you're fresh for it and then recovering so that you can then get better in the gym. You know, you then probably only got like a 3-day window. So say in the in season, we've got a game on Saturday, you're probably going to send Sunday and Monday at least recovering. So then you've only really got Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday to try and make as much improvements as you can before Friday, you're trying to recover again for that Saturday. So you've really got a short window. So you have to take advantage of, or you have to really prioritize and identify exactly what you want to work on during those times. Whereas in the off season, you know, you can do 2-a-days, hell, you can do 3-a-days if you really need to. And, you know, you can push yourself and you can really overreach, increase that fatigue, but then knowing that you've got months and months and months to recover before you really need to be performing 100%.
Yeah. I love that. I think that's great. I think it's a really good message in terms of being specific about what you want to achieve and going for that, depending, and that's going to change around the year, of course, but I love the idea of being specific in your goals and going directly towards those. So rather than trying to do, say, off-season training and in-season and stuff like that, I think you had an article about specificity on your site as well. I can't recall the name right now, but I enjoyed that. Just on that note, this is not a question I've got written down, but just as an extra, what do you encourage your athletes to do for recovery?
Great question, because this is a really important point to make. Is in off season, we don't want to be doing ice baths, we don't want to be doing any of that stuff, because it's been shown like pretty comprehensively now in the science that stuff, whilst obviously it alleviates the fatigue, it alleviates that fatigue at the expense of the adaptation that you're trying to make.
Yeah.
So if you're taking ice baths, if you're doing some of these recovery methods that are helping you get back in the gym, but are actually stopping you from getting bigger or getting stronger, then like, what's the point, right?
Yeah.
Whereas in season, again, what's our priority? It's Saturday or it's game day. So if you're making sure then you're recovered, then you want to make sure that you are recovered for that game. And that involves, like, to be honest, I make sure that all of my guys get enough sleep, they eat enough food. Those basic things need to be covered every time, and that they're kind of relaxed. Other than that, it's really up to them. If they like taking ice baths, yeah, go ahead and do that, and that helps you feel good. But if an ice bath is torture, you know, the 30 minutes of stress leading up to it is actually probably going to offset that. You know, the time it takes out of your day to do all of that sort of stuff can end up actually offsetting it. What we've got to realize is stress is stress, and fatigue is just another type of stress. And if you've had a really, you know, stressful week at work, you know, your missus is mad at you, you're not going to then go home and then just leave to go take an ice bath or go to a recovery center, because you just don't have the time. What's better is that maybe you don't even go to the gym. Maybe that week you actually just only hit the gym once and you spend that whole time just recovering, sleeping and getting ready to perform on that Saturday. But I know that's kind of not a great answer, but like, we recover so much in the mind, because the mind is what helps us de-stress. So yep. If whatever makes you feel good, go ahead and do that.
No, I think that's a really good answer. I really do. It reminds me of an old anecdote that from Bill Starr. And he used to coach American football players, a similar sort of sport. And he said, on the topic of sex before games, he said it wasn't so much the sex that was, you know, tiring these guys out. It was the fact that it was the activities leading up to that. Like, they were going out to the bars all night, to nightclubs and stuff like that. And that really was what did it. So, yeah, I like the general idea of just, you know, doing what you fits into your routine.
Yeah, like the people that abstain, like... I honestly don't get the purpose, because then I feel like then all you've done is built up. And for me, like, any team sport, really, again, it's not just about being as aggressive. Like, maybe you're just a bit angrier or a bit more irritable, but how's that going to help you on a rugby pitch? Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, if team sports are played just as much in the brain as they are by the body.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I always feel better afterwards. So, anything, sex sort of clears your mind, right? Like, it makes you think straight.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd absolutely encourage it. Yeah,
brilliant. Right, so moving on, looking at, I did have a question regarding group training. So I'm assuming you've got some sort of instances where you've taught, you know, groups, or at least you've got some ideas on this. When you're in a group setting and you're sort of going over various drills, how do you account for the different skill levels, strength levels, and fitness levels in a group setting. So just as from my perspective, some CrossFit boxes I think are notoriously bad at this because the entire box may be doing 60 kilo deadlifts for a minute. Even if they're RX, they may be, I don't know, 80 or whatever. For some people, that would be strength work. For guys like you and me, that would just be cardio. So how do you account for that in a group setting?
Yeah, you already hit the nail on the head there by saying that. Like, I like to work by, if I'm in a group, I'll educate as much as I can so that they understand what we're trying to achieve with every single workout, not just, this is the workout, now go do it. Mm-hmm. Like, we're trying to, you know, if we can educate, we can also motivate better because they're understanding why they're doing it. They're not just going, oh, this seems kind of pointless to me. Why am I doing 60 kilo deadlifts for a minute? What's the purpose of this? Mm. And so what I would do is I try and get in RP, like I'd say we're aiming for, you know, 5 reps. And really when you finish, you should have 1 rep left in the tank. I'm not a big fan of percentages because again, it depends on the day. So again, if you've had a real stressful day, 70% is going to feel like 150%. Or if you've had a great day and you've had about 5 cups of coffee before you've trained, 70% could feel like nothing. And you could be doing that for a minute and be just fine. So I try and educate them. And again, if people can cop out with that, they can say, oh yeah, I only had 1 rep in the tank. And I'm like, okay, this time we're going to go for a max. And then they end up doing like 7 more reps. Right. Hmm. And that's been shown in the science that can happen quite a lot. But to me, I'd rather do that so that they have an idea of what they're doing, that they're executing to their best intensity. And then as far as if we've got different skill levels, we would make sure that, and I do this with every single exercise I do, there must be progressions and regressions. So it's not just a deadlift. If you can't deadlift well, then we're probably going to do an Romanian deadlift, or we're going to do some other type of hinge movement. Maybe you're still in the only hex bar that's in the gym. That could work. And if you're really advanced, then we can actually load it up and we can work like more advanced rep schemes or something like that. That helps as well. But for the most part, again, but also if we're looking at that part, that comes from education. And so the more we can educate our clients, and I think a lot of trainers are sort of scared of educating their clients because they think, oh no, if I educate them too much, then, you know, they don't need me anymore. And to me, that's great. Like, if they don't need me anymore, I've almost done my job. You know, I've still got people that I've had for, you know, well over 5 years, and they're just as smart as me now in the gym to an extent, but they see the value in what I do. They see the value in the accountability and that sort of thing, and they don't want to think about it. So then that's why they still use me. Whereas then I've had others where I've coached them for maybe 6 months or whatever. They're like, okay, I think I've got this now, and they move on. And that's also great because you don't want to be paying a personal trainer forever, you know, if you're only using it as a tool to sort of for a specific goal.
I'm very much along the same lines with my own coaching. From day one, I always wanted to give my clients the tools without sort of stringing them along. I'm also of the opinion that those types of coaches, I don't really find them too favorable, but I quite like to give the client as much information as possible. And that seems to be a nice model for them to stick with me. I've had some clients now for 2-3 years just because they feel, as you say, they like the accountability and they feel they're getting value for money through the education. So I definitely prefer that model of working.
And I think that also helps when we like plateau and stuff, because that's inevitable, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to plateau, but if you understand why you're plateauing, or if you understand that this is all part of a bigger, you know, greater scheme, you're in a much better step. Whereas if you don't educate them, we hit a plateau. They're like, okay, this doesn't work for me no more. I've got to try the next shiny object.
Yeah, yeah. I also think there's a larger part of it is sort of their own level of accountability as well. This is one of the reasons why I don't give out meal plans. I actually had to turn a customer away fairly recently just because he wanted a specific meal plan. And I've gone back and forth over it in my head, and I have tried to do it before, and it's never really worked out because I feel they're not involved in the process. I'd rather educate them and help them put together an eating schedule rather than have this sort of give them a meal plan and say stick with it, even if that's what they're saying they want.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I mean, and I've had it with people where they've been desperate for it. Like, look, yeah. I have no idea what I'm supposed to be eating. I'm like, okay, but I'm not going to build this. Tell me, you know, list me your 5 favorite proteins. List me some some favorite carbs. Just me, what vegetables you like. And then we can sort of go from there, but it's definitely a back and forth.
Absolutely. I have a sort of a series of emails that they use to create a sort of a plan for those who are completely in the dark, and that works really well. But I definitely don't give up meal plans. So moving on to a different question, our third question. Have you found any differences in training between the genders?
I actually have. So I think, There's quite a few differences in my opinion, and it's all, well, physiologically, the science shows that women can handle quite a lot more volume.
Yes.
This actually coincides with the fact that they also like to keep moving. They like to keep going, just either from the history of doing like other classes and stuff, whereas guys are just like, yeah, I'm a man, I need to lift heavy weights. So therefore, it actually works out really well that these sessions can, you can take an hour session and you can fit in a lot more volume with a woman because she only needs to rest, for like a minute max, whereas a guy can sit and wait resting for about 3 minutes or up to 5 minutes if you give him time. Yeah. And you would then that volume sort of equates itself. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense.
Yes.
And then personality wise, I feel like, women and men, and this is, it's 2019. I don't know how offended people are going to get by this statement, but like men are complete on one side of the spectrum where they will always go heavier because they're a man and they see that as part of their identity that they should be lifting heavy weights. And then they will use the shittiest form and they will, push it out and they'll say, they'll do a set of five squats and their eyeballs are almost falling out of their face. And I'm like, okay, so what would you say? How many reps would you think you could do more if you really had to? And I say, I probably could do another three more. And you're like, are you kidding me? Like, whereas women are, and this is, and obviously we're massively generalizing, but women come from the complete opposite side where they are so petrified of lifting heavy or they're petrified of hurting themselves that they, again, take that same person, they've done a set of five and they racked it and they haven't even broken a sweat and they're like, oh yeah, I think that was my max. And I'm like, okay, let's sit you under that and let's see how many more that you can do. And I've actually had this before where I've said, okay, we're going to work up to our five rep max, and we did three sets of five, which means that they've already not worked up to their max because they've done three sets on that weight. Yeah. And this is a class of all women. And I'm like, right, on this last set, we're going to see how many extra reps we can get. We can go for as many as we can. One woman got 23. So like it just goes to show, from a mentality standpoint, women have a lot more in the tank than they think they do, and men probably don't have as much as what they think.
Yeah. Obviously we are massively generalizing, but in my experience, that's very, very, very true. With a lot of my female clients, a few of them will listen to this as well. They can generally handle a ton more work, and they generally have to be pushed a little bit harder in terms of going up in weight week by week. I don't know how you feel about this, but certainly what I found is, transformation sort of, losing weight and all that kind of stuff. I tend to find that guys can take having their calories dropped quite low fairly well, but they don't take the amount of volume of work as well. Whereas with women, it seems to be the opposite. And again, generalizing, but they can do a hell of a lot of work, but slashing their calories super low, it's generally not that productive.
I think that could be because, obviously with men, if you're starting at 2,500 calories, there's a lot more wiggle room to slash those down. Whereas if a woman's starting already on, 1,200, you're already doing that by half. And then actually, I also think an issue that I have with up in the weights week to week with women is, for the most part, they're not going to be as strong, right? So we're dealing, so say if we've gone from a set of whatever it is, set of dumbbell bench press using 10 kilos, then to then go to 12 kilos, you wouldn't do that with a bench press with a guy who's got 100 and go, okay, next week we're going to do 120 kilos. Like you wouldn't make that percentage increase. Yeah. And I find in like pretty much every single commercial gym, you are forced to make really huge jumps the lighter the weights are. And that tends to be sometimes problematic.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I tend to use different variations of exercises. So I actually did that this week with one of my clients, Bex. Rather than going up in dumbbells, we actually just raised the incline slightly on her dumbbell bench press.
Genius.
And then, you know, it's just small things like that works pretty well.
Yeah.
Okay, brilliant. Right, so going back to sort of training athletes again, this is a question that I'm particularly interested in, just because it seems to have raised its head in the bodybuilding community recently, and I quite like the fact it has. There's been more of an emphasis on cardio for health rather than for fat loss. Now, how would you go about improving cardiovascular ability of your athletes, the ability to not get gassed, things like that?
Yeah, that's spot on. And this is one of the things that I always try and promote. It's one of the biggest things. So I have, when people say, hey, what's the one thing that most people don't do for like rugby, and football is the same thing as well, is that these sports are nearly all aerobic. You're not running around for 40 minutes at the same pace. You're not even running around for a minute at the same pace. You're running for bursts of maybe 10s on the high end, but you know, 5 to 20 seconds at a time, you're performing at high intensity. You're then spending the rest of the time just recovering. So the stronger that your aerobic system is, the better you're going to recover, the better you're going to perform at your sport. So does that make sense?
Yeah. I'm a huge fan of Joel Jameson. I don't know if you've heard of him.
Yeah.
He places a massive emphasis on having sort of your underlying cardiovascular ability, what I would call sort of steady state cardio.
Yep.
He places a huge emphasis on that.
Q work. It's working on the, so you're working on the actual heart, and the more efficient the heart can be at pumping blood around the body, the better you're going to be able to perform in it. That doesn't only stop you, or that doesn't own, because the goal isn't to take a 5 second sprint and extend that out to a 10 second sprint. The goal is to do as many of those 5 second sprints as possible, or to be ready to do as many of those 5 second sprints as possible.
Yeah. And what's going to help your recovery in between is going to be your heart and your cardiovascular system.
Absolutely. And so I think you said, so there was one of the questions that you had about gaining muscle as well, is actually one of the most important things I do with my rugby guys is if we're bulking or we're in a massing phase, we're absolutely doing cardio. Because if you're taking an athlete and you're taking them through a game of rugby, and then all of a sudden they've added, say they've added 5 kilos, and even if that 5 kilos is of muscle, you've added 5 kilos, try running around with an extra 5 kilos on a weighted vest. It's going to make it much harder. So you should be able to learn to adapt to use that, or to adapt to carry that extra weight and be fine, and so that your aerobic system can support that extra weight. So it's really important. And the way I do that is, again, it's pretty much any method, because we're working the heart. It doesn't really matter too much if you're running or if you're cycling or if you're doing any of that. I actually prefer, funny enough, the elliptical, because it's really easy to get the heart rate to 120. You can zone out, you can watch TV, or you can do, I've watched lecture slides whilst doing it. You can watch Game of Thrones. You can just take your mind off of it. It's not that hard because you've got the whole body moving, and you can really work the heart rate for about, and you can work for anywhere from 20 minutes to an hour. And there's no real fatigue risk with that, because you're not impacting any joints. You're not doing anything. As long as you're eating enough food, you're pretty much going to be fine. Whereas if you're going out and you're doing sprints, not only are you working, you're kind of working the heart rate, but you're not really doing exactly what you want to be doing to build out the aerobic system, but you're also massively increasing the amount of fatigue that you're going to cause the body, which again, as we've discussed previous, is just, it's fatigue is fatigue is fatigue. So that's going to interfere with your body trying to build muscle, or with your body trying to recover for the next game, or whatever it is. And that's not a good thing. So if we can do aerobic stuff without having to increase fatigue, then I'm always going to take that option.
Yeah, I think that's great. I love the idea of sort of working with energy systems and making sure you're training the correct system for your goal. Like I said, if you want to work the heart, and you're generally going to want to look for those kind of things that we've discussed and the specific types of training. Do you use heart rate very much as your sort of target heart rate zones? You sort of mentioned 120 there. Do you use that with your training just to sort of give the athlete an idea of how hard they should be working?
That's exactly what it is. It's just to give them an idea. I'll just say 7 out of 10. So like, if you can just hold a conversation, it's enough. or if you're using an Apple Watch, you know, those heart rates aren't entirely accurate. But yeah, that, for the most part, I'll just say either an RPE 7 out of 10, or it, you know, hard enough that you could just about hold a conversation, or again, a heart rate of 120 or so usually is a good base for that. Where I will get kind of hot on heart rate is when we're doing real high intensity, and we're trying to push that boundary, because then we're really trying to be specific. But that only really applies to the different sort of rugby stuff that I'm trying to get to.
I use a similar system if I'm doing conditioning. So I'll have three categories. You know, it's just for ease of communication, really, sort of all out, medium and light. And I will roughly give them a target heart rate. But in general, just for ease of communication, it sort of helps just to let the athlete know exactly what to do so they can just go.
Yeah, absolutely. Because again, yeah, as we sort of discussed there with the genders as well, people, you know, you can say to someone, hey, make sure that you're doing, you know, 7 out of 10, and you know, they're walking really slowly. You're like, listen, that's not a 7 out of 10. Who are you kidding? And vice versa, you've got those people that, you know, and this is more what I deal with in terms of rugby guys that are, you know, these are people that are applying for online coaching. They're mad keen. They want to work hard. Their biggest fear is not working hard enough. And so then I'll use that heart rate to say, hey, listen, this isn't, we're not going so hard here. We're not. And if anything, that's my problem, is trying to make sure that they stay within that range, because they think, oh, harder is better. And it's like, no, that's then taking us out of what we're trying to work on.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think, you know, I was just about to say that, actually. Rather than harder is better, we need to be looking at, well, what are we trying to achieve? What's the purpose of the session?
Yeah, goes back to education.
Yeah, brilliant. All right, moving on to sort of next question. We've got a few sort of general questions here. So, just going on to, you know, in your TJ Strength hat, for Gen Pop, do you have a preferred macro range for either fat loss or muscle gain?
No, and this is a big, I'll say pet peeve of mine, but it is something that, and I did have, I probably would have always said, you know, I'd have had people calculate their fats, calculate their protein, and then the rest would be carbs, and then, or yada yada yada, I'd have all these different ranges. But I think I've said it already before, it's protein and calories. Mm-hmm. And then the fats and the carbs sort of take care of themselves, because lifestyle is huge. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if someone really enjoys sushi, for example, and they love their rice, they love eating all that sort of stuff, then why am I going to say, you're not going to have that because we've specifically got to have 100 grams of fat arbitrarily and 200 grams only of carbs? Like, who does that help?
Yeah.
Nobody. At the end of the day, it all gets processed and ends up being the same thing. So why not do the diet that people are going to enjoy the most, so they can stick to it the longest in the long term? Having said that, I've seen Steve Hall's stuff, and well, it's not just Steve Hall's, it's the evil genius product Chavez.
Yeah,
the real high carb stuff,
high carb low fat. Yeah,
yeah. And I get the principle, but I think that you have to be incredibly dedicated to stick to that, to the point where, again, it's an inconvenience. And at what point does that inconvenience stress you out so that you're not actually making the progress that you could be?
If I might go on to a bit of a rant myself about this.
Go for it, mate.
Your
podcast.
A lot of those recommendations I tend to find make a lot more sense when drugs are in the equation.
Yeah.
So I have there's a coach around this area as well, who puts out quite a lot of content looking at high carb days, low carb days for people who are bulking. And I know that this coach was trained by Mala Sosev, who obviously is very famous for his insulin use and blah, blah. But he's putting all these weird, wacky sort of dietary schemes onto guys who are natural and weigh like 170 pounds. So it doesn't actually make any sense. I mean, I even hear people of doing sort of fasted cardio still, not for the purpose of like they like doing it, but, you know, as it's going to actually do better. But again, it's a drug thing, because there are certain chemicals you can take which promote increased fat loss in a fasted state. But, you know, there has to be that caveat there. So I also tend to think the high carb, low fat, it works with certain androgens better. This is just theories from things that I've read and taught and discussions I've had with people. So I think coming from Broderick Chavez, it makes sense because that's generally who he deals with. But I think what happens quite a lot on Instagram and social media is a lot of these ideas get bandied around into the evidence-based crowd who generally are natty and well, not that advanced. And I just don't think it's appropriate at that time. So I think that's where a lot of this comes from. And it's a bit of a pet peeve of mine because I happen to know both sides quite well. And I can identify things which are going to work when chemical assistance is involved and things which make no sense for a natural. So I think this is one of those cases.
I absolutely agree, mate. It's that thing of like, what's the most important thing that you work, that you can you do with your diet? It's stay consistent in the long term. Like, that's where people go wrong. It's not because they've had 110 grams of fat instead of 80 grams of fat. Like, no one's gained extra fat instead of muscle because of that. That's not a thing. We've got to look at this, you know, and especially if we're taking natural trainers that are potentially gaining what, you know, a natural advanced trainers at least, a push, what, 2 kilos of muscle a year?
A year, yeah.
Lean muscle, like something like that. And you're doing really fucking well if you're getting that. Why are we trying to wring this sponge out rather than just leave it there, and over time it's just going to eventually go to exactly where we want it to be anyway, and we can actually enjoy life.
Yeah, 100%. And what I say to my clients who are doing competitions or photo shoots is, for the last week or two, we're probably going to play with macros quite a lot. Certainly the last week. But that's to achieve a specific look. It's not for the purpose of fat loss. So for the rest of the time, I fall in line with what you're saying. It's just a case of what can we do to increase adherence.
It's funny that you say that. Even then, like, I think people will tend to overlook that because I, you know, I've done it where when I was like 20 or something or 21, I'd go on a lad's holiday and I would spend the week trying to manipulate my my carbs and stuff and do all that sort of stuff and manipulate my water levels, and I'd have a pizza the morning before going on the lad's holiday or whatever, like it was a fucking photo shoot. But at the end of the day, I was sitting there at 18, 20% body fat, and it didn't make any difference whatsoever.
Yeah.
And again, all of this is just like, I get it, because bodybuilders are, you know, they're the peak of essentially what people are trying to achieve. You know, they have high amounts of muscle mass, they have low amounts of fat. But at the end of the day, we're not trying to, you know, at the end of the day, we're trying to live life. We're trying to not be so obsessed with all this. And all this stuff is doing is creating extra noise, creating extra distractions, and taking us away from the things that do matter and what are actually, at the base of it, really, really simple and really easy to implement and actually succeed with.
Yeah, 100%. So moving on, in your opinion, and I guess this is somewhat related, what is the biggest stumbling block for the sort of the gen pop client that you work with looking to lose fat and get into shape? So prior to coming to you, what have you seen there to be their biggest stumbling blocks?
100%. They don't have a goal. They don't have a specific set of goalposts that they're not aiming towards, which means that you can go for, you know, well, you can skip a training session here. You can then skip that, which ends up turning into a week's skip of training session, which means I'll start next week, which means then I'll start next week. And then, which means next thing you know, it's been 4 years and you've actually, rather than started your gym routine, you spent 4 years doing nothing and gained 20 pounds of fat.
Yeah.
So now you've actually got to lose that 20 pounds of fat that you've gained because you haven't set any goals to begin with. You've never had anywhere to go. You don't know what you're supposed to be doing. So first thing most people lack is an actual clear outset goal and a time frame to achieve that goal. Once you've got that, then it becomes a lot harder to skip a week, or it becomes a lot harder if you skip the week to then skip the next week, because you know you're like, crap, I'm now a week behind. I've got to either make up for lost time, or I've at least got to get back on track because I've got to aim towards this goal. You've got a reference point for where you're trying to be, and you're not going to just be stuck in no man's land for months on end. Mm-hmm. And then from there, it's kind of obvious, right? It's that shiny object syndrome. It's not taking a look at the bigger picture. It's not understanding, again, because of those goalposts, understanding that 1 pound a week is phenomenal progress, because that's actually where we're supposed to be. The amount of people that I have that, you know, the first, if I'm taking general pop people and they've lost a pound in a week, and then they report back to me and they're disappointed. I'm like, why on earth are you disappointed? Like, that is success. And even not losing weight is a success, because most people end up gaining weight month to month to month. Mm-hmm. And it's just that little increase that ends up with people being out of shape. And so it's that accountability week to week. And it's those, that long-term thinking and understand that even if you do mess up, it's not the end of the world. Let's not sabotage ourselves. Let's just get right back on the horse and take that bigger picture thinking and head towards our goals.
I love that answer, and I totally agree. One of the things I've tried to emphasize a lot in my Instagram stories recently is the idea of having a plan. Because while I see a lot of guys quite dedicated, having a week-to-week plan, rather than, as you say, looking for that next shiny thing, they're like, okay, we'll do this week, X, Y, Z next week, a different thing the other week, rather than having an actual plan which gives them a long-term progression. I think a lot of guys like that. They might have all the necessary enthusiasm. They might go in the gym 4 or 5 times a week, but having a lack of a plan, I think, is a big gap in what a lot of these guys have.
Yeah, and again, because if you don't have that plan, then you could be disappointed with a pound of fat loss because you're like, oh, I've only lost a pound. Maybe these other 7 million things that are on the internet that I can try are going to have me lose 3 pounds this week. Yeah. Well, you know, and again, that probably goes back to the education point, whereas if they understand that it's not worth it, you know, there isn't, you know, if anything that does lose you that much of weight, it's not going to be sustainable. But yeah, it's just, I don't know, people, we just seem to be so short-sighted with everything, and we seem to reward, or we seem, you know, and that's part of, I think that's part of like modern day culture, really. Yep. You know, everything's for the short term, and rather than actually having to be happy with the process, be happy with, like, you know, just be satisfied with what you're currently doing is, yep. Because we've got so many different things on social media telling you that you're terrible, that you get tempted to change it all the time. And so being content with what you're doing, as long as you're making progress, is like, it's huge.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Yeah. I completely agree. I actually had this conversation with a client just recently, Ben, who's probably going to be listening to this, but he was just talking about how he needs to sort of be a little bit more patient with his progress, et cetera, et cetera. And I was like, hold on, Ben, you know, when you first came to me, we dropped 60 pounds of fat off you, and then you've gained 20 pounds since, you know, and you've been lean as well. And he put together a comparison photo of me, and sent it through on WhatsApp just today. And he was shocked himself to see the difference. And I was like, well, that's what I've been saying all along. You know, over time, your progress has been fantastic, but it's the sort of week to week. You know, he just had to sort of remind himself that, yeah, week to week is not going to be hugely visible, but look at what we've done over the last 2 years. And that's I think that's important to remember.
Yeah, it also comes from that comparison, right? And again, that's something that I think people are afraid of, and other coaches and other whatever people are afraid of telling people, is that sometimes people say, I'll have people send me a picture through as like, this is the look I kind of want to achieve. Mm. And I'll be quite frank. I'll be like, look, you might be able to achieve that, but this person has phenomenal genetics, has been doing this for 20 years, you know, because they started when they was 12. Mm-hmm. Like, let's be realistic here. And you could do that. But the dedication required to get even close is huge. And then some people then realize that, they take a step back and they're like, okay, I don't really want to achieve that because I'm not willing to be as dedicated to do that. And that's absolutely fine. Mm-hmm. Because then, trust me, I've got to 4% or 5% body fat. I wasn't happier, you know. It was cool, but I definitely wasn't happier.
It's a miserable experience.
Yeah, quite the opposite, in fact. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I look back and I'm like, geez, I don't know if I'd ever want to do that again.
Yeah, I'm not competing this year probably for that reason. So I'll save it for next year.
Well, that's the point. I look back on my photo shoot and I'm like, do I ever really want to do that? Like, I enjoyed the challenge for sure. Like, I really did. But like, to say it brought me any happiness whatsoever would be an outright lie. Like, it wasn't. It was, I just did it because it was a challenge, because I had to retire from rugby, and I figured I had something to do. And that was it.
Yeah. Yeah, I was very similar. I'm aware I'm taking up quite a lot of your time, so I'm going to finish off with one last question. We'll call it there. We've talked quite a lot about fat loss and training for athletes. I just wanted to switch the gears a little bit into muscle gaining.
Yes.
So you've got a client who's somewhat skinny. Let's say he's under-muscled. How would you structure a muscle gaining off-season for them?
So to me, the first and most important thing is how many times they can make it into the gym. Mm-hmm. you know, we tend to outright just prescribe like different days and or different rep scheme, not rep schemes, different body part splits or training splits just arbitrarily. Whereas the most important thing to me is like, how many days can you make it in the gym? And then also, like, what else are you trying to do with your life? Because if you're trying to do, I don't know, if you live quite an active life, you like say you work in labor or whatever it is, then doing a massive leg day once a week is going to screw you, because you're just not going to be able to perform at your job week to week. So I would then take that person, and really, this is again, this is my typical cop out answer that I seem to be giving you all the time, mate. But it really does depend on the person. But again, we look at the bigger picture, and all we look at is increasing volume week to week to week as best we can until we hit a stumbling block. I have been a fan in the past of doing, you know, 6 weeks and then deloading, or 8 weeks and then deloading. But now I think life usually gets in the way. People have vacations. People, you know, do other things where they end up not being in the gym or whatever happens. And sort of that will be our deload. But I don't think it's overly necessary. I think now that it's what's more important is just, again, week to week increases in volume and eating enough food. And I'm okay with people gaining a little bit of fat with that. Mm-hmm. As long as it's for a specific purpose. And again, it's a part of that bigger picture. So we set a goalpost. I'll usually go around, depending on how advanced they are, we're going from 1 to 5 pounds a month or so of gaining. And then we can clean that up from there. But it's week to week, increasing the volume. Personally, I'm a fan of always doing full body workouts. I'm a fan of, full body workouts as often as we can. And that way we spread in the volume over the week. And I think that, to me, it's more fun. It's more convenient. I get that some people like to get a pump. So again, for that person, I might change that up, because if you're doing full body workouts, you're not going to get a sick chest pump that you would do if you did 20 sets in one session. But I just think it's a bit of a better way to structure it. That way, if you skip a gym session also, it's not the end of the world, because you can then just make it up the next day and just keep rolling that way. But I'm a big fan of doing full body workouts. One exercise per body part, and just rolling it out. Different body parts can then be prioritized by just adding more exercises in and taking away from other places. And it's just really just as simple as that. And again, the main thing is, as we said before, gaining muscle is like a real long-term process. Mm-hmm. So the main thing is really is that they'd be adherent. Like, there's no point in them doing the sickest 5-week muscle gaining program if they're then going to be so burnt out at the gym, like, because I've been there. I've been there where I've been like, you know, I've been dedicated. I've been doing 6 days a week, and they end up being 2-hour sessions, and I've stuck to my macros perfectly, and then I've just got bored. And really, what's most important is that you keep increasing that volume, and that you stay in the gym week to week to week. It's, muscle gaining is a year round process. As opposed to something that you can just do in 4 weeks and then say, okay, I'm done gaining muscle now, and then just move on. That's not how it works.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a great answer. And I love the emphasis on full body workouts. That was actually my first introduction to bodybuilding, roughly 2008, I think it was. I'd been powerlifting for almost a decade at that point. But I was influenced heavily by the work of Casey Butt, and if you're aware of it.
Yep. Yep.
He does some fantastic work on bodybuilding and full body workouts, and it worked out great. Actually, he was a wealth of knowledge.
Yeah, I'm a lot more influenced by Menno Henselmans now and his Bayesian bodybuilding method. I like that. I like the idea of that. I like the idea that he literally examines everything. And is like, well, why are we doing this? Oh, just cause. And then, but then sometimes, even when there's not real science behind it, he's like, well, this team still seems to make sense, and these guys that are jacked are doing it, so we can do that. And like for me right now, I do myself 5 full body workouts, and I can get through it really quick. It's super convenient. It takes me about 30 to 45 minutes because I'm super low volume, because I've just started training for Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, which is incredibly fucking cliche at the minute, to be honest. But,
Mike is still.
Yeah, everyone seems to be doing it. I love it, but it gets me sore, and so I have to sort of. But I don't want to get away from gaining muscle, so I structure my own training that way. It's super convenient. I don't have to be overly dedicated, and then at times I'll also then go through a higher volume thing where I'll do only 3 times in the gym, but I'll be in there and I'll be more dedicated and I'll enjoy that. Whereas at the minute I'm just doing it like I'm brushing my teeth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I found that when I was doing 40 workouts, I really enjoy the simplicity, and there was a completeness when you have a workout. There's no specific area that was killing, but you just felt you had a good whole body workout. I also felt I had a bigger calorie burn as well, but that was just me.
Yeah. I think I can agree with that. It's probably also the jiu-jitsu, but I'm really like enjoying the fact that, because I always grew up as a fat kid, and now I'm actually struggling to put on weight or hold on to my weight. So this is fun because I get to eat more food and enjoy it.
I'm exactly the same, actually. Yeah. Brilliant. Absolutely same. Well, Tom, it's been awesome talking to you. Thanks very much. And
thank you, mate.
Yeah, no, it's been great having you on. You're one of the guests that have actually made me feel comfortable being a host. So thanks a lot for that. That was great. Awesome. I'm gonna put all your contact details wherever I post this. But could you like to just give us just a quick rundown of where we can find you?
So at tj.strength is where I'm most active, I'd say, on my Instagram. If you like cool looking dogs, then I probably have the coolest looking dog. She's she's sat right by me now. She takes up a lot of my stories, but I try to be proactive there, and I've been getting quite a lot of feedback recently just saying that they love what I've been doing, because I don't really mince my words. I'm not like, because I think a lot of what you see on Instagram now is either stuff that just gets likes, that I've seen like people put deadlift tutorials up, and I'm like, who's going on Instagram to learn how to deadlift? Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't really make sense, but people are going to like it because it's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. And then the same thing of like the food comparison things and that sort of thing. And I get that they're striking and obvious, but you're not really helping anyone. That it's just a striking thing to get a few likes. Whereas I sort of pride myself on my little small community of people that like, I really try and put value out in my posts. So there's that. And then I guess they can follow the links that are in my profile there, because there's a bunch of free stuff. I have a free physique nutrition crash course video series, which if you're down with what I've been talking about with nutrition there, you can learn a little bit more there with that. Or if you're a rugby player, I've got free conditioning sessions that they can pick up as well.
That's awesome. Thank you, Tom. Brilliant. And we'll call it there. And I thank you once again for coming on. And cheers, mate.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.